Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Trash Talk Show. I'm Barb Tobias. We're talking today about turning trash into treasure. And what I mean by that is the trash in our lives needs to be honed and cured like a fine diamond and turned into treasure. We have an amazing guest this afternoon. Her name is Jill Pond, and she comes to us from Girls Right. She is about taking our adolescent women and bringing them very gently sometimes and sometimes with a little push into womanhood. So, Jill, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You know, you and I have had a brief talk before the show, and you really have an amazing organization. But before we get into the grit of that organization, let's talk a little bit about Jill. What is it, Jill, in your early upbringing or your early life, I should say, that led you to creating Girls Right?
You know, that's a great question, because truly, that's what brought about the formation of Girls Right, is my past and the experiences that I had. And, you know, I grew up as a tomboy and very much into sports and playing in the dirt and the mud and, you know, never really caring what I was wearing or what I looked like. And then I started nearing towards, you know, approaching adolescence. And, you know, there's something pretty powerful about the hormones that start entering into a girl's body as she approaches, you know, as she's on the transition of becoming a woman. And what happened to me was my body had started developing, and I started sort of getting, becoming interested in boys. And I had no idea how to integrate all of that was happening to me, not only physically and emotionally, but socially. I couldn't really reconcile what was coming at me with the way that I'd been kind of living. And, you know, the result was a very kind of miserable existence through adolescence, feeling like I wanted attention from boys. I wanted to be beautiful. I wanted to still be good at sports. And I didn't know it just didn't make sense to me how that all kind of worked out together. And, you know, my parents were very loving, very supportive parents, and they did the best they could, but they were not very comfortable talking about, you know, I got the talk where we did talk about puberty and what would happen, but there was no discussion about the emotional and social aspect of what was happening. And so I used MTV as kind of my guide to growing up, which
and,
is a horrible
what is
guide.
What is that?
So
MTV,
you know,
are you talking the media, what the media portrayed?
The MTV basically came about back in the 80s, where it was music videos. And so my role models were these women clad in very kind of slutty leather outfits with their breasts hanging out and their butts hanging out. And to me, so that in my head, it was like, okay, well, that's what I need to do to get love and attention and to be considered beautiful. And
that became your role model.
That became my role model and sort of the ideal of how to sort of embrace becoming a woman. And
well, you know, let me just stop you right here, because you're saying so many incredible things that I think that people really, particularly parents, really need to listen to as our children are growing up. You know, but one of the things that you said is you really didn't know what to do. So unlike men or little boys that have sports role models, that have business role models. You know that women are only 3% of our history books? It's incredible when you think about the huge contribution that women have given to this world, and yet we are only in 3%, and that's in the United States. I can't even imagine what it's like in other countries. Only 3% in our history books. So our only role models are the media.
You're so right about that. And it's interesting to kind of wonder whether it has to do with the grooming of girls. Like, well, you're a girl, so this is the type of show. You're going to like shows about princesses and this type of thing. You know, my parents never talked politics or history or any of that with me. So there weren't role models available who were smart women, but who also, you know, it's just kind of, you don't really see a lot of that. And plus the women around, nobody's talking openly about what it means to be a woman. So
mm-hmm.
It's all very confusing.
Yes. Yes, and it's confusing. So early on, and here's what I think is also interesting, because as you know, Jill, I am a, you know, big proponent of gender bias or the lack of gender bias language. And one of the things that you said is, as you were growing up, you were a tomboy.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't say you were an athlete or you loved sports or the out of doors or fishing and camping. You classified yourself as a tomboy. And I think it's very interesting because our language defines us. And when we have this huge gender bias language issue out there, little girls growing up, not only are they getting hit by the media just to be sexual objects, but we're also learning by our everyday language that things are man-made, that they're businessmen, that they're congressmen, that, you know, it's like I said earlier, it's manned spacecraft. Little girls begin to learn that being a guy or a boy is better.
Well, I think that there's something to that because, you know, looking back on it, I was made to feel wrong for the way I was. And not that my parents ever said anything outright, but I was different. I wasn't wearing skirts and dresses and, you know, there was something very different about me than most of the girls. And so you kind of get lumped in there with the boys, I guess.
And you get typecast. And you know, all of a sudden you're a tomboy rather than just, you know, an athlete. And this is my preferred way of dress. Boom,
mm-hmm.
You know. But yes, when we're young and we're vulnerable and we're looking around and trying to figure it out, you know, how do we do that? How do we put it together? And what you're saying is MTV, oh my goodness, was like your role model. So, okay, but, you know, maybe enough of that. Let's get into, so now you got to the point where you really wanted to create something for young girls and possibly young boys as well, so that children don't have to go through such hardships as you did in trying to create this positive identity of you being a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So
true. And sorry,
so where
go
did
ahead.
You go? What happened?
Well, I think a few things happened. Girls' Right sort of started coming into being about a year and a half ago when I was ready for a career change. I'd spent some time in corporate America, and it just wasn't fulfilling. And then what had happened is I realized that I was still carrying a lot of shame with me from my own adolescence.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And I just, you know, it's not, whatever happened, we all do the best we can with what we have. And
right.
As adults, it's just a waste of time to be carrying that stuff around with us. And so it really occurred to me, well, why not stop the bleeding but at an earlier age and really help these kids? And this is really about incorporating sexuality into our lives. So why not help these kids incorporate that when it starts to become relevant for them? Instead of hiding it and pushing it aside and making girls feel shameful for having just a very natural thing occur to them, and that's going through puberty, getting hormones, and, you know, starting to have sexual desire and that sort of thing.
Well, you know, Jill, right from your website, I saw a quote from Mary Piper that I thought was very powerful, very true, and feeds into exactly what you just said. And Mary Piper said, adolescence is when girls experience social pressure to put aside their authentic selves and to display only a small portion of their gifts.
Mm-hmm.
How sad is that? How
it's really,
ultimately sad.
Yeah, it's very heartbreaking. And I think the pressures of, and really the media puts so much pressure on girls, and it's so insidious and it's so subtle a lot of the time that people don't even realize that it's happening. I mean, it's very cliche to say, to talk about the media, but it's true. And, you know,
and the thing is, it's not getting better. It's getting worse.
I agree with that.
When they have these ultra-thin models, for example, that they have to Photoshop and make them even thinner, it's like, oh, my gosh. It's like, where has this image of women gone so askew? We're not talking health. Yeah. We're not talking athletics. We're not talking fitness. We're talking purely beauty.
Yes.
And how is that defined? I mean, if we look back, you know, centuries ago, I mean, women that were a little beefy, you know, they called them Rubenesque, that, you know, had some meat on their bones and everything, that's what was valued. Look at our old paintings. They weren't stick-thin figures with no boobs.
It's funny you bring that up because I was looking at somebody's Facebook page and they were in Italy and had posted a picture of a painting that they had seen there. And I thought, huh, you know, that woman is, by today's standards, and I believe it was Venus, is chunky.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I can say through my own experience, I started developing an eating disorder when I was about 20 years old.
Oh,
and,
my goodness.
You know, and I'm in my 30s, and I still, you know, I'm recovered from it, but I still live with it. And what the media does with these, it sells a particular body image. And even if you're thin, if you don't have that particular shape to you, it's just not good enough. And
well, you're exactly right. Let me just interrupt you here again. Sorry, Jill. But,
sure,
you know, this
no.
is such an interesting conversation to me. I was a fashion model for 20 years.
Hmm.
And we were, you know, thin, but we weren't the stick thin that you see today. But
right,
we were all thin, and we initially, when I started out in the industry, we didn't get boob jobs. I mean, that's just what we were. All of a sudden,
right.
When the Victoria's Secret thing and everything hit, where you have these thick, you know, thin girls that have these fabulous breasts, well, my God, they were all, you know, inserts.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I started to see the gals that I did fashion with start getting boob jobs. What the heck? Here we are getting operations on our body purely for cosmetic reasons.
Mm-hmm.
To what? To attract men.
Well,
we don't do it because it's more comfortable, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
You know?
Well, if you look at the shapes of women out there, what is advertised is pretty voluptuous, very round breasts. And again, going back to that painting of Venus, she didn't have breasts like that. And in part of the curriculum for the Girls' Right, that's one of the things we talk about is going through the physical changes that girls will experience. Is we do talk about breasts, and one of the things I really want to reiterate is that they come in all shapes and sizes, and even nipples come in different colors, and it's not, you know, this Photoshopped version of, you know, the boobs that you see in today's media.
Right.
And I think that's so important because girls, I think, can have a lot of shame around that. And, you know, if their bodies don't match up with that standard that they're being presented with. And that's how eating disorders get started. That's how people get addicted to plastic surgery. That, I mean, you know, it starts out as a small seed planted in somebody's head about well, this is the standard you have to live up to,
mm-hmm.
and you're never going to be loved or good enough or have any value if you don't look this way.
Exactly. And what do they say? I mean, you know, we grew up with Barbie dolls. I mean, my
mm-hmm.
goodness, proportionately, Barbie doll's feet are so small and her boobs are so big that she literally would have to crawl on all fours. She could not, you know, walk with that type of you know, body proportions.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it, there's statistics on the internet about it. It's absolutely atrocious. And yet these are what little girls are dressing, and they're primping their hair, and this long mane of, you know, gorgeous, thick, you know, hair.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything about that doll is, you hate to say it, but anti-normal woman.
Right. I agree.
And yet, that's the standard that these little girls are, you know, are learning by. Oh my goodness!
Well, yes, and I have a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old who, you know, they love watching videos that's anything to do with fairies or princesses or, you know, girl power type stuff, and it's all very, even the stuff that's supposed to be girl power is all very typecasting. They love to dress up in princess dresses, and it just, you know, even at this small age, you kind of get worried about, you know, what message am I kind of sending by buying them this stuff?
Well, you know, I think what we're talking about is anything in life is about balance.
Right.
And if there's balance, I mean, think about if there was a doll company or a toy manufacturer smart enough to come out with Athletic Anna or something like that, where this woman had outfits where she might serve in the military, you know, she might be a CEO of a corporation, you know, she might be a soccer star or whatever. Think about all of a sudden how it would shift the paradigm of how moms think and allow them choices of buying an Athletic Anna doll versus a Barbie doll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, oh, my gosh, let's put a CEO in charge. Okay, that's it, Joe. We're going to start a women's toys manufacturing company.
It's not a bad idea. You might corner the market on that one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we think about it, and most of our CEOs across the country are men. Most of our boards are made up of men. And so, consequently, who would think of that?
Right, and I think it all kind of goes back to, you know, like that quote you read about, you know, Mary Piper's quote about adolescence. And so it is talking about social pressures kind of spur adolescent girls to put aside their authentic selves and to basically buy into what they're seeing as what they should do.
Mm-hmm.
And so going back to what I do in kind of integrating sexuality into all this, I believe that sexuality is used as a weapon in our society pretty frequently. And girls learn that pretty quickly, that sexuality, there's some power in this. And what I would love to see is for sexuality to be integrated into our lives as just another normal part of growing up. You know, we applaud our babies when they learn how to crawl, when they sit up for the first time. It's like a big deal when they start getting their first teeth, when they start walking, when they say their first words. These are all things we celebrate, but we get so afraid when they start to grow breasts or pubic hair, or they start approaching those ages. And parents, I've heard them, they dread giving the talk. And you know, I would challenge our society to stop thinking of it as the talk and start thinking of it as just something you start talking with your kids about as they approach that age, and then to continue it on as a conversation so that it's not this awkward, shameful thing that they're kind of fighting against, not sure how to integrate it into their lives. And so I do believe that girls really act out around this area because they don't know better. They're doing the best they can to try and fit in and have, you know, all those, to have value and worth, and it kind of backfires.
Yeah, well, you know, it sure does. And of course, you know, you and I could talk forever, you know, about this topic, and there's so much to it. So before we, you know, get carried away here and we've got to close the show and whatever, I just want to let everyone out there know how to get a hold of Jill Pond and her organization. It's called Girls Right, and it's very easy. Her website is girlsright.com, G-I-R-L-S. Right, R-I-T-E, like the rite of passage, .com. And Jill, do you want to give a phone number out as well?
Sure. They can reach me at 303-875-6620. And we do customizable workshops. So if you have a 10-year-old and her group of friends want to talk about, you want to have a little one-hour class on periods or menstruation, we can do something like that. If you have older kids who are starting to date, like 12, 13, 14, we can have workshops where we're talking about decision making and dating and how that all works. It's just so cool and it's so much fun, and I really enjoy working with girls.
And it's probably one of the few places today that girls can go that can really get these kind of difficult questions for them answered, and you know, hear more than, you know, in the bathroom, and
right.
And you know, while they're combing their hair, or you know, what conquest they got, you know, that day. I mean, they're getting good stuff from these workshops. So you know, one of the things that I want to talk about a little bit, you know, maybe in terms of these workshops and whatever, is they really don't teach much sex education in schools. They didn't teach any when I was in school. And so my first question, and I guess it's two part, is, you know, so where do people go today? And obviously the answer is your workshops. But why also don't they teach sex education in schools, or are teachers not really prepared?
I mean, I think that's a huge part of it. Most of the teachers don't have any training whatsoever, and it's just as awkward for them as it is for the kids to teach it. Secondly, I think the schools walk a really fine line, but they don't want the parents to call them up and give them an earful, you know, because everyone has different beliefs about who should be teaching their child about sexual health. So I think being that it's a controversial subject, the schools walk, you know, they're really careful about what they say, what they teach, and even if they do teach sex ed, it's a pretty mild version of it from what I've seen and heard.
Well, let's move then into some of these statistics that just absolutely blew my mind. And I have them here in front of me, and you can probably just rattle them off, but 29.3%, almost 30% of girls in the U.S. have had sex by the ninth grade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how old are you? 13? Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
I mean, ninth graders are 14, 15 typically. And this is what gets me, is these statistics are showing, I mean, I don't even know how much money the Bush administration spent on abstinence-only education, at least $1 billion, and it failed by looking at these statistics, obviously. And I think, going back to what I said, we need to just embrace that sexuality is a part of our life.
Yes.
And it's not something, we need to teach our kids how to be safe and respectful as opposed to trying to tell them not to do something.
Well, you know, here's the thing. If you look back generations ago, girls were married at 13 and 14.
Right, exactly.
And now, you know, and they're having babies. And now we say, oh, it's babies having babies. But guess what, folks? It's been around for hundreds of years. So the
right.
Bottom line is, if they're having these hormones, they're having these feelings, they're having these urges, and it's just like, oh, ignore them? Well,
right.
You know, I understand the whole thing about abstinence. I get that. But the bottom line is, okay, what do I do about this part over here? What do
right.
I do about my urges, my fantasies, you know, all of those things that really do happen? And I'm sorry, ladies out there, if we're offending you, but think back, they happen.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we do with them? We can't brush them under the rug.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, there's so much to be said around this particular topic, and it really, I just wish people could understand that you're right. Girls used to be married off by the age they were 13. Their bodies were ready to procreate, and you know, we've changed a lot socially, but the way that our bodies develop has not really changed. And you know, people keep saying, oh, girls are developing earlier and earlier and getting their periods earlier and earlier. I don't necessarily think that's true. 10 is a very normal age to get your breasts and your period. I mean, when we're looking at 8-year-olds, that's a whole other story. But I think people have forgotten what it was like to be a young, you know, an adolescent girl. And, you know, in one of our classes, we do talk a little bit about masturbation. And it's such a, you know, talk about gender equality. Everyone assumes that boys are just going to start masturbating by the time they reach like 12 or 13. But God forbid you know that a girl would do it. I mean, it's like a whole another level of meaning if a girl is masturbating versus
a boy. It's that double standard that exists on every single level of our society, which, you know, many of us are working to change that, and obviously that's just one of them. But what happens if we don't address this is 750,000, according to your website, from Guttmacher Institute, Guttmacher, is that what it is? Guttmacher Institute?
Good, yeah. Yeah.
That 750,000 U.S. women become pregnant between 15 and 19 every year.
It's staggering, isn't it?
What are we talking about here? Are we talking about, oh, I don't want to have this conversation, or, oh, you make me uncomfortable, or, you know, whatever, you know, get over it.
Right.
We've got an issue here where we're, you know, having these teenage moms, unmarried, you know, raising babies, and what is that doing to our society?
Well, so, I mean, that's a whole another can of worms.
Yeah, we're opening a lot of cans today, aren't we, Jill?
Rabbit hole, whatever you want to call it. But I think that, you know, if you do look at the average age that people get married, it's mid to late 20s. And, you know, looking at the statistics, young people have sex for the first time at about age 17. And so asking someone to wait until marriage, I didn't get married until I was 27. And, you know, I know some people are waiting longer and longer. And for some, if you look at the statistics as to when a girl starts getting hormones and starts having sexual desire, I mean, that's a long time to kind of deny those natural urges and feelings.
Yes.
And so I think that there's
something that's always been acknowledged about boys, oh, you know, it's okay, or they're going to get a little, or whatever you want to say. The bottom line, it's always been acceptable for them to have those urges, but it's not acceptable for women. And the bottom line is we know that women mature faster than boys, so hello, you know, what's going on here? All of a sudden we have to put ourselves in a cocoon and until we're ready to be married and totally ignore what is happening to our bodies, which is normal and natural and, folks, God-given. So the bottom line is let's get real. You know, Jill, unfortunately we're at the bottom of the hour already. We have to go. I cannot believe we have barely scratched the surface of this conversation. And you have been such a delightful guest. I certainly want to have you back on, and I want to have you on my other show in the Women's Radio Network, because we have so much to discuss in women out there and men. Let's not disregard the male impact that this can have within a family environment. You know, they need to hear these messages.
I agree, and, you know, I really appreciate you providing the venue to get the word out. It's, I think it's a topic more people need to start thinking about.
Absolutely. So, folks, go and look at Jill Pond's website, girlswrite, GIRLSRITE.com. She has a wealth of information and knowledge in there, And she also has some amazing seminars that could really help you move that child of yours into adulthood with compassion and understanding and most importantly, knowledge. So